Welcome to the first episode of the Peshauri Cast. Here I talk to Haura Bin Haryanawala, a wife and a mother of two living in Houston, Texas. She is a visual artist by profession and a truly inspiring person. We talk about life, art, and so much more. Do you want to get right into it? We're short on time, so we'll get right into it. I think I've talked to you a little bit about what I kind of want to ask people, and it's mainly about their educational or their past in education, what they studied and all. Actually, I want to ask you, what did you want to study? What did you, ekdam jo are nhana hoi chhe ne, to what did you want to become? Oh, je was 7-8 varas na hoi ne apne puchhe na ke su banvu chhe.
So, yeah, I was always the kid with her head in the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
So I had many dreams and they would, I had a very active imagination. So I used to be a pilot, and then at some point I was astronaut, and at some point I was doctor. So any kind of biography that I would read, for instance, Florence Nightingale apne parutu school ma, it was about Mother Teresa, right? And so I got this whole idea about how, one can go save the world and help the sick. And so I think I was very grandiose as a child. I had these ideas about being a poet and then being a saint and then being, a monk. And so I think that kind of points to a really active imagination and somebody who can inhabit many lives. And I think that was kind of an indication of where I was going, which is, I ended up studying art, in which you do have to have a very active imagination. So it was never some kids grow up thinking, I'm going to be a pilot, and that's it. That's stuck in their heads. That was never me. I was every day was a new day, and every day was a new, big, massive, life, world-saving dream.
I really like that, because in some ways I see myself, I see similarities between us. I mean, we are kind of blood related in some senses. So, matlab em hoy chhe na ke koi bhi movie jo hai na ema je main protagonist che, I would always want to become that.
Yeah.
Be that a karate movie where the guy just knows kung fu, or, a superhero movie. I would just want to be that. And akku pachi, the whole thought process of ame kim bani saku chu, a shakhs kevi tarah bano. But sometimes it'd be he was Superman. So you can't become Superman,
No, but I think it just sort of refers to a certain kind of greediness in me, at least. Because even I wanted to be, at some point I wanted to be Mr. Miyagi, or I wanted to be the karate kid. And so I think it's that want to live many lives, and that awareness that your life is short and you can have that many experiences, and then you want really a rich life, and you want a variation. So I think that's a certain personality type that lends itself to it, right?
Absolutely. Really, even though I am taking on this path towards psychology, I still even the smallest things, a friend of mine has started repairing phones, broken phones, just as a side gig. That's a whole different world. And and then I see someone else doing something, completely different. I'm like, and it's so intriguing for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but you, as you mentioned, you did end up studying art. So let's say, why was that, or how did you end up there?
It wasn't a very conscious decision. It was just something I kind of fell into. We were in Karachi and I met somebody who was going to art school, and they kind of mentioned that there's this really good art school in Lahore, and I had no idea that it existed. I kind of knew of people who had become architects and stuff through my uncle, who's an architect. And so that school kind of had a notorious background and history. But then this person who was practically going there currently told me that, no, it's a really nice school and should definitely look into it. So I looked into it a little bit. And then I'd always drawn. I'd always been encouraged to, paint and sculpt and do whatever I wanted to do. Even at school, even in science class, the teacher knew that I knew how to draw really well. So she would tell me, this this is pre-internet, pre, like, you know, where printing wasn't that easy. So she would tell me to draw the whole, like, nervous system on the blackboard. So I would do that. So that was kind of like, yeah, even through my science days, I think the art part of it was a heavy element that kind of was always there. Because you have to be very visual to be scientific as well, right?
Yeah. But I would say, huh?
So yeah, so I got introduced to the school through somebody. But specifically why I wanted to study art, I really didn't know. And even when I went to art school, I realized that my interests were very, they were not specifically about the painting itself. It was very peripheral. Like I was more interested in the artist's life.
Yes, I understand.
Right? And then I was more interested in the circumstances of every like big art piece. Like how, what time was it? Like the history, the context. So many other things intrigued me about the art. Like the visual itself would be like, okay, 2 minutes of looking at the visual and then quickly I'd read the title. Quickly I'd be like, okay, who made this? Whose influence was it? You know, so I was more interested in the person than the painting per se. And that I realized quickly as soon as I got to art school. I was like, okay then.
Maybe I should be studying history instead of art.
Like I knew that the people were where my interest lied, you know. So a lot of my work was also like very interview based, and I did a film for my mini thesis in which, like, you know, I interviewed people in the same household. And it was like this whole concept of the blue landscape, which is the idea of everyone's one like image of freedom. And so we did like questionnaires and then we came up with pictures and we talked about how people in the same household will have a different idea of freedom at different ages. So, you know, everything was very much about the people. And I mean, I'm so much more confident talking about it right now. But back in art school, it was pretty fraught with a lot of like confusion and a lot of like, what am I doing with my life?
Nice. But and how many years is art school?
It's 4 years. So the first year is foundation year, where you study all this subject. So you do design, you do architecture, you do art, ceramics, I think. So you do all four foundational topics of art. And and then as you go further in the years, you kind of define it more.
Okay. And was there any specific medium that really, like, you really liked?
Yeah, I think I did like something, but I didn't follow through with it. Like, I really liked sculpture.
Okay.
And when I would talk to Dad about, you know, he was the one I would go to for advice, and he was like, you'll do sculpture, but then, you know, you'll get married, you'll have kids, and you might not have a studio at your disposal, so do painting, because that makes more sense. And I think I followed his advice, but that was not the smartest thing, because like I see myself building things, not just like I think the two-dimensional is too limiting for me. So I think over the years, like I've realized that, yeah, I did painting, that was okay, but I think sculpture was better, and I should have just gone with my gut feeling.
Gone with it. Yeah.
And not made the practical choice. I think the practical choice is always so stupid.
I think that's great advice, and so, hopefully whenever someone listens to this, I think
that would be something like, to take. You know, you have this feeling, you have an inner draw towards something, but it doesn't look like a path for it that you'll be able to follow. But because right then that's making sense to you, I think it's, you know, do the next right thing for yourself, rather than thinking 20 steps ahead or talking to somebody who is 50 years ahead in their life, because they're looking at life from their perspective, you know, how things were in their time versus how things will be in my time. And now if I think back, I'm like, I mean, I could have really, the shape and form my life took, I could have been a sculptor. It was pretty easy. I could have done it, you know, but it's okay. I think I've had enough adventures with painting as well. And so,
true. And currently you are kind of, I'd say, earning through your paintings?
Not at all.
Not at all?
No, because as I said, I was more interested in the people. So then what happened was when I moved back to Karachi, my kids were little and I had to figure out how to run my career and the kids. So I got into art journalism, which was very much about dialogue, very much about the person behind the painting. And so I followed that thread. And then I did art curation, which was again about a lot more people interactive, a lot more about, you know, sharing the work with the people rather than the work itself. And then there was interior decor. because my final thesis was a site-specific piece of art. So the thing that concerned me the most during my years in art school was this idea of space. So mental and physical, emotional space, these three kinds of spaces that always sort of showed up in all of my thoughts and conversations. And so the site-specific part of it was something I easily carry over into decor. Because when I had the people part of it, I knew I was interested in people. I can read people. I can connect with them. And then so it was very easy for me to connect the site-specific and the person and say, hey, you know, this couch over here will make sense with this piece of art. And this is what you're thinking. And this is how it's going to make you feel. So I got good at that.
Yeah.
So right now, my art practice is mostly about decor and consulting. And within that, I put up a lot of custom artwork.
All right.
Yeah.
That you've made yourself.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So independent art sales, like I'm not into products.
Okay.
So it becomes very product oriented. Oh, look at this piece of art that I've made. Would you like to buy it? I can't do that.
Yeah. And it makes so much more sense because, I mean, like you said, that you were always drawn to that social, but that interaction with people or stories. And now you're kind of looking at those people, understanding who they are, and then making a space that is them through art.
Right.
In a way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really amazing.
That is. Like, it's kind of like the merging point of all the things that I'm interested in. So.
Yeah. And you mentioned journalism because I always was curious about how, I mean, art was always one thing we knew that you were doing, but we never knew how, you know, you got into writing and so much of that. But now that you've mentioned art journalism, but was that only in Karachi or how did you get into that?
So I always wrote as a child, like writing is very therapeutic. It's been researched and it's been proved that writing has therapeutic value.
Yep.
So I would do a lot of communications through writing. Like I would write letters to people and then that kind of died with the internet. And then so I would write, like I would love reading poetry and I was very fond of writing. It was my medium. So I think that I can specifically remember the day when it was in Karachi and I was thinking a lot about the art world in Karachi, you know, the art scene per se in Pakistan. And I opened up the Sunday newspaper and there was this art review and the reviewer was so hard on this artist whose work seemed pretty decent. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
And you know, it was like, it made my, like you can physically feel your blood boiling. Like I was like, how dare this like grumpy, irritating old man write something so mean about, like it's hard enough to be an artist in Pakistan. How can you be so hard on somebody and just like, you know, one show and you're just destroying this guy. So I decided to take charge. I started talking to a few people and I was meeting some people who were in the editorial side of things. And then I talked to, and you know, I think I've always in my life, whatever my intentions are, the doors open up. Like, I think it was 2 days after that review and I was talking to somebody and I was like, who is this idiot guy who wrote this horrible article about this person's work that is not even that bad? And then she was like, oh, guess what? I'm an editor at the mag. And she was like, you have such strong opinions. You should be writing. And I was like, I would love to do that. So I started writing. And so then I got my second break with this friend who was an artist and he knew this woman who ran a magazine. So I got into her magazine and then one thing led to another and I've been published fairly consistently while during my years in Karachi. Then when I moved to Houston, I kind of stopped that because, you know, I wasn't there. So I was watching this documentary about Margaret Atwood, the great Canadian author of The Handmaiden's Tale, which has become very popular these days. And there was this, the second line in the intro of her documentary is a word after a word after a word is power.
Wow.
And I truly believe that. I think words have a lot more power, in my opinion, than a lot more power than pictures. So I'm always drawn to writing.
They do, yes, absolutely. I wouldn't discredit the fact that art or the pieces that are on walls don't influence people. But I've always been kind of in, like, it's a very confusing thing for me. Like, a few weeks or months back, there was this art piece where whoever the artist was, they stuck a banana with tape on a canvas and it sold for, I don't know how many millions.
Yeah.
And those kind of things, that's where I'm conflicted. I mean, I don't understand the why of it, of pieces like those,
yeah,
and why they're valued so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say that even words of that same person would have more value than sticking a banana on a canvas.
So I think that I'll give you the short answer to that. I think art is like any other subject. It has a lot of history. It has a lot of political value too. And if you want to study one piece of, you know, that piece with the banana stuck on the canvas and its value, you have to really go into the history and recognize what happened over the years to make this piece valuable.
Yeah.
And then you have to understand what's going on in this person's personal life, like, you know, to have made his work so valuable. So I don't think you can, like, and I think the common easy answer to that is you diss all modern art. And I don't think that's the truth. I think there is a lot of very valuable modern art, which is very abstract, and on the face it's very confusing, but it has a lot of spiritual value to it. And I think that taking away a form is a spiritual, rebellious, very dangerous act by an artist. Because it's very easy for me to draw you a chair that completely makes sense to you. But for me to put some brown paint over there and, you know, make you feel something like, you know, somewhere between a walk in the woods and, you know, shit in the bathroom is like a confusing place where I'm taking you, right?
Yeah.
And it's dangerous for me to go there because I'm putting myself on the line as an artist. Because, you know, I run the risk of people ridiculing my work or, you know, dismissing it. So I do think that modern art has to be studied. Like, and the thing with art is because people can see it and because there are no specific rules, anyone can say anything and get away with it.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that about science. You couldn't do that about math.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, you wrote a shitty equation, you would have to study all the equations in order to prove that this is a shitty equation. So you don't go there.
Yeah.
But with art, people do that because they take a lot of liberties. So yeah, I do think that that's the effect of good art takes time. I think that's what I don't have. I don't have the patience. And most artists create work which is very valuable, very ahead of their time. And then it becomes recognized after they're dead. And I wasn't interested in that. So I as I said, I like immediate results. So, you know, writing an article, taking some control, seeing some responses right then and there, that was more me. So it was more recognizing what makes sense to me.
And I think the brutality of the art community is what really kind of terrified me, because I've never been able to draw or sketch or paint, but I did get into photography and then I wanted to go forward with, you know, filmmaking. But then that wasn't the only thing, but that was kind of a huge deal for me, that art or the art community itself is so brutal that there's no gray area. There's just, it's plain black and white. It's people either like it or they hate it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of why I didn't want to then go into it more.
Yeah. No, I mean, you have to have a lot of, like, a lot of thick skin, a lot of a very heavy stomach to take all of that. And also you have to be really ambitious.
Yeah.
In order to make it in the art world, you know, and I think most people who are creatives are also sort of sensitive, and that's why very few want to play in that field, because it's really like the gladiator arena, you know.
Yeah, you have to have that confidence that what I've made is good, and I mean, that is it in some
and very few people are like that. Like, if you think about actual humans, like if I think about myself, like the idea that I would just, you know, stand so form in a visual that I've created, it just requires so much aggressive energy and so much stubborn sureness about yourself, which very few people have that personality, you know? Like, you have to essentially be an infant. Like, you just dig your heels and say, no, this is it, and this is... And you're so sure that everyone starts doubting themselves and you confuse the crap out of everyone. Yeah. And then that's how you win, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So anyone who's interested in growing up and becoming an actual human would not be able to play in that. I think Damien Hirst, for anyone who's listening, is a good example of this. He created all of these pieces, and I think he was inspired by the pop culture guy. Sorry, I can't remember his name. The one who did the Marilyn Monroe's. So anyhow, I'll once I remember the name, I'll tell you which artist he was inspired by. But like, he created all of these paintings where all he was painting was like circles of different colors. And then he did a skull with diamonds on it. And then he did the shark in a tank of, you know, formaldehyde. I think that's the chemical. And that was supposed to be like talking about death and all of those things. And over the years, he made a ton of money. He was very celebrated. And then recently, he realized what he had done and how bad his work really was, and how many people he had sort of, how many young people had kind of followed his footsteps and lost their way because he worked in sort of like, he didn't really create all of his work himself. He had these factory kind of situations where people were doing work for him.
Oh, wow.
Which was a known fact, and which is perfectly fine because most great artists had apprentices and stuff. But like, you know, he did have this moment later, much later on, after making tons and tons of money, that he had made a mistake. He recognized that his art was really, really bad. And it was... So, yeah, I mean, I think that that was just a season in his life. And he went and he celebrated that. And, you know, later he said, oops, I'm sorry. So anyone who wants to look him up, he's got a very interesting life story. So
I think that's really powerful, though, to realize that and then admit it. So openly.
Yeah.
You really have to have that, because in some, I mean, you are so celebrated, and why would you, you know, kind of let that go? Because one would feel that if I do, you know, even though I am feeling this inside and it is my conscience, but once I admit this, if it could have a really bad impact on the work that I've done and, you know, what I am celebrated for.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the market value of his work crashed and it was like this big, like, news item. But I mean, it's as you said, it's really nice to see someone actually have a conscience and say, hey, you know, this was wrong and this was bad.
Exactly.
Rather than just persist and say, you know what, I can't now back out of this corner I've painted myself into.
Yeah.
And the artist I was talking about was Andy Warhol. He's the one who did the...
Okay.
Yeah, he was the kind of the lead artist in the pop art movement, which is the post-industrial art movement. So yeah, what were we talking about? I don't know how we got to Damien Hirst and his...
This is what I love about talking to people. Digression is... I love digression. I always digress.
So, ask me a question. Let's focus back.
Yeah, you'll have to go in a bit. So I'll kind of... You did mention what you are doing currently in, you know, interior decor and all of that. What are plans for the future, per se? I mean, you still have quite a long way to go, so...
Yeah, I intend to, you know, kill everyone before I die. So. I recently had a very interesting sort of... I took a big step in my career, because since moving to Houston, I felt like, okay, I did a little bit of marketing work with a friend, and that was purely for money. And then, you know, so I was kind of fumbling around looking for what I want to do next. And the decor work, it comes like through referrals, and one person sees the work and they're like, okay, hey, you know, why don't you do this too? And so that's how that was working. It wasn't giving me that energy that I needed. And I felt like it was time to really look hard and deep at what I want to do for the future. And so I went on a mad goose chase, goose hunt, as they call it. And so I found this one thing, because I knew that personal development and sort of people were important to me.
Yeah.
These two topics, like how people make progress, how they change, how they grow up. and you know, and their stories. How do they interact, and how do they sort of take charge of their lives, and how do they grow themselves up? And I guess I was growing up myself, so it was kind of, you know, like your personal life also sort of works alongside all of that. So anyhow, so I was very interested in personal development, and I looked at many things like counseling, and I looked at many things like therapy and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I wanted like a cross between therapy and teaching.
Yeah.
And somewhere like motivational speaking, but not quite.
Yep.
So I searched a lot. It was like maybe around 2 years, 2.5, 3 years. And I came across this thing called Clifton's Strengths.
Mm.
I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's a strengths-based assessment that a person can take. And it was produced by this, it came about because of this research that Don Clifton did.
Okay.
And this started in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to find out what people are doing right. Like the whole basis of his research was he wanted to know why people are succeeding. He didn't care about why they're failing because that's where, you know, where therapy comes in.
Exactly.
He was just interested in what are the things that these people, these successful people are doing right. So tons and tons of years and years of data that he analyzed, they came up with like 34 talent themes. And they came up with this test called the Clifton Strengths Assessment. And it looks for what you naturally do best.
Yep.
And it gives you a whole talent report. And then you can sort of very clearly base your life in your strengths profile. And I loved it. I took the test and it freaked me out because it was so accurate. And then, yeah, so it was really amazing. When I read the report, I was just like, whoa, like someone got inside my head, right? It's 177 questions. And a long story short, I certified myself as a strengths coach. And I think the service part, the people part that was missing from my work and my life is kind of now coming into play. So I kind of now have two consulting businesses. And only yesterday I was like writing out a few things because, you know, I write. And it said like Creative Consulting Studio H, which is my, you know, art business, and Human Capital Consulting, which is my Empowered Life Solutions business. And so in a very weird, twisted, convoluted way, I've kind of come about to the idea of space yet again, inner and outer. And, you know, and both are kind of service oriented businesses and they kind of link up, you know, your outer space and your inner space. You have to guard it. You have to make it the best. You have one chance at life. You know, you don't keep coming back.
Mess it up. Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the mission of my life is to help people have like an awesome outer and inner space so they have the best, least emotionally painful and least visually painful life that they can live. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
I love that. Oh man, it makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
Because your eyes are a huge part of your life. And like the sense of being able to see is so important to each and everyone who, I mean, can see.
Yeah.
And you're kind of already in that area and trying to help people with that. But now you're also helping people
look inward, the inner eye and the outer eye.
Yes, looking inward. Yeah.
Yep.
That's amazing.
So yeah, I mean, it's not been an easy journey. Like, I think if people are listening, and I hope they do, it's never really easy to kind of really find that thing that you do, unless you're just like one of those people who has a dream, like I'm going to be a doctor and become a doctor, and then you've got your dream and you're happy. And most people are not like that. I don't believe that's true for most people. So I do think that it's a journey, and I think if you can enjoy it and if you can keep at it and keep looking, like I think self-reflection is the biggest piece of it. If you don't reflect and if you don't like keep taking stock and stopping and saying, do I like this? What is it that I like about this?
Yeah.
Because your happiness and your success and your strength and your value in life is your responsibility. Nobody can do it for you.
That's amazing.
Right?
I think that should be on a wall somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think society...
my walls, they're filled with words.
Because, see, I've always felt that society thinks that it has a huge, I mean, it does have a huge role to play in your life, but mostly when you talk about yourself, society then comes in and says that, no, this is what we think you should do. Mm-hmm. And I think that most of our society or the society that we grew up in mm-hmm. has been, or I think still is, in that kind of stage where they still, the people will always jump in to give their own opinions. Mm-hmm. And mostly opinions are fine, but sometimes it's so much more than an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And to constantly self-reflect and to like think if whatever you're doing is what you like, I think a very important thing to do, even though if you're young, old, that doesn't matter, because what you like, it's kind of your inner calling in so many words,
mm-hmm.
that if you like something, because what people suggest and the opinions mm-hmm. that people have about whatever you should do is, like you said earlier, is from their perspective and from their experience. And they don't know what you will be so many years from now. And again, as you said earlier, if you would have taken up sculpture, you would have been in a very different area than you are now. I mean, the journey that you are on right now is obviously very different, but very, like, you've gone on it yourself. But again, yeah, to embark on a journey that you want to do yourself, I think, is what we take away.
I think that the thing to recognize in terms of what you said about society and opinions is that there is a duality in life, which is it's also a theme that I explored a little bit in my art, that in every moment mm-hmm. in your human life, you have two things going on, which are always polar opposites. Like, if you ever think of a moment when you're really happy, it's also got sadness in it, because you know that this happy moment will end. So you will be sad. So you're aware of the opposite, the polar opposite. So in every moment, like, if people are giving opinions, right?
Mm.
You might feel like you're at the mercy of their opinions, or their opinions matter.
Mm.
At the same time, you should also know that you have the power.
Yeah.
And recognize the fact that their opinions don't matter.
Mm.
It's only in here. It's all in your own head. And so you have to recognize the strength that you have. At the end of the day, it only matters how you look at yourself. Like, if I choose to start going down a very negative path and feeling like, oh, my dad took away my opportunity to become a sculptor, and so I didn't have all this super financial success, and I could have and should have and would have, then, you know, I can be a really awesome loser if I wanted to be, and I could really burrow in there, and I could live in that, and I could write really sad poems and live my life like that. But really, at the end of the day, you have all the power in the world to, you know. And at the end of the day, honestly, like, I think it's about, as you said, knowing yourself.
Mm.
It's about self-awareness, because yes, especially in the East, people have a lot of opinions. They're random. Yep. They're based in God knows what, mostly in their own histories. And they have, honestly, they don't have any filters in terms of stopping themselves from saying something.
Yep.
Or even, you know, because it's culturally inappropriate to ask a further question. So as a younger person, if someone says something, an older person says something, a younger person is not supposed to ask them to clarify. Like, why did you say that? Does that make any sense? Because that's like, you know, misbehaving with the elder.
Yeah.
So that is something that we have to be very aware of. And I was very aware of it when I was younger, because I used to read a lot.
Mm.
And, you know, people would give me advice about marriage, and then I would look at them and I'd be like, well, I see that you have a crap marriage. Why are you giving me advice about marriage? I would literally, like, I was a very rebellious, I'm still a very rebellious human, because I'm an artist, because I do question things.
Exactly.
And I was reading a book and it said, well, when you're asking for advice, please don't look at somebody who's willing to talk to you. Look at somebody who's actually achieved something.
Mm.
If you're asking for marital advice, look at somebody who has a great marriage and then ask them for advice.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was, I think, an Indian author who'd written that, because again, India and Pakistan are similar.
Yeah.
So definitely 100%, I think, for any young people who are listening to this, you have all the power. It matters what you think. And at the end of the day, it doesn't pay to be sad and depressed. It pays to be happy and joyful. So work towards those goals.
Amazing.
Get out of the excuse zone, because the excuses will only go that far in life.
Absolutely. Love it.
And that is the end of the
service. I can sit here all day. Tune in next Friday. I love it. Thank you so much. I hope we can do this again sometime. After a while, I think, so that we have some more stuff to talk about.
Oh, but, for sure.
Yeah.
And best of luck. And since you love stories, you're on the right track, making a podcast. And that way you get to inhabit many lives.
Yeah.
And you are serving your greed really well. Who says greed is bad?
It isn't.
It isn't. Just feed it the right things.
At least as long as it's helping everyone, greed isn't bad.
Yeah. And you get to have so many more experiences through so many people. And it, you're putting it to good use, and you're using it for service. So there you go.
You know what this is? This is generous greed. I would say this is generous.
Yes, the duality of life,
yeah,
right? Like
exactly.
Generosity and greed both together. And you're
greed.
Like, we have
absolutely.
A podcast.
Yeah. Oh man, I love it. Thank you so much, Hora Khala.
You're welcome.
I'll go ahead and now record an intro for this. Hopefully, I'll see how it goes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Best of luck. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.